And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people." Amen. You may be seated.
What's the happiest time of day? You ever thought about that? Someone actually stepped back and did research on this. They went to Twitter and examined to find out what seems to be the happiest time of day. And what they found is that we're happiest in the morning, and then it all dips throughout the rest of the day, and then comes up again at night. They actually went and analyzed 509 million tweets from 2.4 million different users over 84 different countries. And what they found is that positive tweets, does everybody know what a tweet is at this point? I hope so. Things people post on the internet, the positive messages, they go up between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. And then there's a steady decline throughout the day until like a trough, the low point is between 3 and 4. In the afternoon every day. And then they start to work their way back up, and they peak again in the evening after dinner. And what Twitter discovered about how our day-to-day lives go with that starts happy, gets really low, and then ends happier, well, they discovered in this other research project that that's kind of true for our lives. The Brookings Institute discovered this pattern of joy that shows satisfaction when we're young, high, and then it dips through our young adult years and our middle-aged years, and then begins to go up again as we get older. Why do you think that is? You know, think about a couple weeks from now. I picture little kids when they get their presents and parents being frustrated because they give them this nice toy and there's the kid playing with the wrapping paper or the box, right? Because they can find joy in anything. And then I think of older people who are mature and have lived many years. And what is it that they want for Christmas? You don't need to get me a gift. The gift is that we're all together, right? They've learned to take joy in something other than stuff. And I wonder if the reason why we see this dip in our day, but in our lives, is because in those middle years, we spend so much time chasing joy. Recently, one of the most famous couples, Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen, they divorced. And I haven't talked to Tom in a while, so I don't know the details of the situation. And I'm not commenting on their relationship, except there was this one tweet that Gisele posted that said, "Tom needs to pursue his joy." And a lot of people are like, "Yeah, okay, that makes sense. He needs to pursue his joy." Is joy really something out there for you and me to find? Is it waiting out there to be found and caught and captured? I don't think so. Joy is not something you can chase and catch. I was reading a short story by Tennessee Williams the other day. It's titled Something by Tolstoy. And it tells the beautiful tale of a young man and woman, Jacob and Lila. They grew up classmates. They grew up sweethearts from the time they were little kids. And when they got older, they married each other, childhood sweethearts, had a beautiful marriage. Jacob's father passed away tragically, but left his family bookstore to Jacob to run. So Jacob and Lila moved into the apartment above the bookstore. And they were together, this loving, happy couple, running this bookstore together and just having all this joy. But Lila wanted to get out and find more things. She liked to sing, and a vaudeville company came through with all these traveling performers, and she went and sang with them, and she's like, "I need to get out. There's stuff out there. There's happiness out there I need to experience." And Jacob's like, "Yeah, but we've got our lives. We've got the bookshop here we've got to take care of." And until one day she finally walked in and said, "I'm leaving. I can't do it anymore. I've got to get out there and find this thing that's out there, and they want to take me on, and I'll travel with them, and I'm leaving you today." And Jacob said to her, he gave her a key to the bookshop and said, "You better keep this because you'll want it someday. Your love is not so much less than mine that you can get away from it. you will come back sometime and I will be waiting. And she took the key and she left. But she didn't come back. Jacob waited hour after hour, day after day, month after month, turned into year after year, and she never came back. And Jacob buried himself in books the way most other people bury themselves in alcohol. And just immersed himself reading all the time to the point where he barely paid attention to people. He had to hire an assistant to deal with people because it was like he became a shell of himself, just living in his books day after day, month after month, year after year. And then one night near Christmas, they were closed up for the night and his assistant was in the stacks just cleaning things up, and Jacob was doing what he always did, sitting at his desk reading with the light over his shoulder. And you heard a rattle in the lock of the door. And then it opened and in walked Lila. She'd come back. But Jacob didn't notice. His head didn't even move. He was buried in his book. And she walked to the desk and said, "Jacob?" And he looked up from his book and, not recognizing her even, said, "Oh, can I help you? Sorry, are you looking for a book?" And she's shocked. She said, "No, but, well," catching herself and not sure how to take this moment that he didn't even recognize her. She said, "Well, yeah, I guess I'm looking for a book, but I can't remember the name of it. Let me tell you the story." And then she went on to tell the story of these two childhood sweethearts, how they had met, how they had grown up together and loved each other and gotten married and lived over a bookstore, and how she had been foolish and run off thinking she'd find joy out there, but had finally come to her senses and returned. And she said, "You've got to know this story. It's the story of Jacob and Lila. Don't you know it?" He scratched his head and said, "It sounds familiar. Sounds like something by Tolstoy." And then the story ends this way. Only the heartbreaking metallic echo of the key dropping to the hard floor interrupted her horrified silence. Lila, having let go of the key as well as her hope, fled the bookshop in tears. And Jacob returned to his books. It's a tragic mistake to think that joy is something out there to be hunted and pursued, because all the joys that you and I are able to catch and grab hold of in this life, they're not enough. They're too shallow. They don't last. They don't endure. Even if they were to endure your whole lifetime, that's not enough. For our joy to be comprehensive, to be eternal, to be real joy, it has to last for our lifetime and beyond. That's real joy. It can't come from a source within this world then, can it? It has to come from something, someone beyond this lifetime in order for it to be a joy that can last beyond this lifetime. Real joy has to reach into this life, and it has to reach beyond this life for it to be joy. Anything or anyone who could give that kind of joy would have to stand outside of all of this and give it as a gift. And so, only God can give this kind of joy that we all crave and long for. And that's what makes Jesus' birth something to celebrate every day. Not just when we roll around to this solstice time that where we chose to celebrate Christmas, but every day. We gather every Sunday, do you know why? To celebrate the arrival, the coming of Jesus, his death and his resurrection all together, because they all tell the story of joy, why we have joy. Jesus was the gift of God who can bring real joy to the world, because he gives a joy that reaches into this world, but that also reaches beyond this life. Talk to your friends. Talk to your friends over the next few weeks about being a Christian, and they'll tell you that they think the reason people become Christians is because they're scared of hell and want to get into heaven. That's the reason. The reason, the only joy most people see in being a Christian is the joy that one day they hope they'll get to get into heaven. And that's the joy. It's all, you know, we're going to live this way now, we're going to sacrifice and not do certain things and do other things because we're hoping we'll get joy in the end. Like, that's how a lot of people think of Christianity, even Christians. But I want you to listen again to Mary's spontaneous prayer song that we read just a little bit ago. Mary, the mother of Jesus, sang this song about the joy God had given her. It is so much more than just, oh, I'm so happy that God's blessed me. No, this song is a robust and even revolutionary joy. Let's look at it again, starting in verse 46 of Luke chapter 1. And again, you can follow along and take notes in our app if you've got our app on your phone, if you're not there already. But Luke chapter 1, verse 46, Mary starts and says, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. He has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the mighty one has done great things for me. Holy is his name." So that's Mary's part about herself. And thank you, God, for looking on me this way. But now listen to the rest of her prayer, because this is the source of her ultimate joy, right? That wouldn't be enough. Those first two lines where God showed me favor. That's not enough. Mary is looking for a deeper joy than that, and it comes out in the rest of the song. She says, starting in verse 50 now, "His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their innermost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors." What is it that's bringing Mary joy in that moment? Her prayer song drips with the joy of anticipated justice. Mary's not rehearsing the things God had done in the past. Mary is looking forward and anticipating what she knows God is doing now because Jesus has entered this world, God with us. She's looking to the future. She's looking forward to the downfall of the oppressors. She's looking forward to the hungry being fed, the elevation of those who suffer and are poor. Her joy comes from realizing God has remembered that he promised Abraham that he was going to bless the whole world, all of creation, through Abraham and his descendant, Jesus. This is not, oh, I'm so happy God loves me, and now I know it because, you know, I'm going to have give birth to Jesus. This is, her joy is that God has stepped into this world, and God is setting things right and bringing justice and peace into a broken world through Jesus. That's her joy. It wouldn't be enough if God just did a nice thing for her. Her joy is in the big thing God is doing. And that, just sit with that for a moment and think about your joy. This challenged me, and I felt smacked in the face by this. How could we be joyful about merely escaping and getting away from the trouble of this world? How could that bring joy to a person who's truly human, truly like God? Whew. The world's going to hell, but thank God I'm out of it. How could that possibly bring us joy? Jesus' goal was not to dig a tunnel so you and I could escape. Jesus came to conquer evil and sin and death and to achieve final and ultimate victory and make all things new. That's what Jesus came to do. That's our joy. Not that, oh, God, get me out of this, make my life easier and just help me escape. And, oh, I know one day he'll help me escape. But no, that God is bringing about victory over all that is evil and broken and unjust in this world. And one of the truly messed up things about us as humans is that we're able to take joy in having excess while fully being aware of others who are hurting and in need. We chase joy in extravagance and in waste, and we think it's a sign that we've arrived somewhere. Yeah, we've arrived. Guess where we've arrived in that moment? We've arrived at being inhuman, unchristlike. We chase joy in amassing wealth. How can a healthy, godly human be joyful while they know that others, their neighbor, just your neighbor, is lacking and hurting? I think back to Paul in writing his letter to the Corinthians. They would gather together on Sundays and they would worship and they'd gather around the Lord's table to celebrate what Jesus did for them. And some of them, everyone brought their own food to that moment. Some of them had tons of food and they were gorging themselves while others had barely anything. And everyone was okay with that. Those who had a ton of food, they didn't share it with those who needed, those who just had a couple pieces of bread. And Paul's like, how can you possibly be sitting there celebrating what Jesus did when you so obviously don't get it? And they thought of themselves as spiritual. They thought of themselves as being really close to godliness, but here they were showing that they totally misunderstood what Jesus came to do, to bring justice into this world here and now, a justice that lasts beyond this life even. The joy God gives reaches into this life and beyond this life. And I think about that and what happened with the Corinthians and Paul. I think about our world, and I think about myself, and I invite you to think about yourself today. You know, they were blind to what Jesus, the joy of Jesus, a joy that goes beyond this life, but more than going beyond this life, also goes into this life and matters for today. They were blind for what mattered for today. How are you? Do you see what Jesus is doing here and now? That joy isn't just beyond, that joy is for here and now too. The joy God gives reaches into this life and beyond this life. That's what makes it unique. That's what makes it incomparable to any other joy. Tim Keller, in his book, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering, he writes this. He said, while other worldviews, whether they be religious worldviews or secular worldviews, but other worldviews lead us to sit in the midst of life's joys, foreseeing the coming sorrows. Christianity empowers us, empowers its people to sit in the midst of the world's sorrows, tasting, not anticipating, not hoping for, tasting the coming joy. The gift of joy that God gives doesn't come after sorrow. It fills us in the midst of sorrow, giving us the strength to face and deal with the realities of grief and sorrow without being consumed by them. There's a writer named Stephen Mitchell. He once described it as a holy joy so large that it's no longer inside of you, but you are inside of it. A joy that you and I get to live inside of, even here and now. For joy to be real, it has to reach into this world and beyond this world, and only God can give that joy, and he has in Jesus. And so whenever you feel surrounded by trouble, by worries, by struggles in this world, remember the joy that God gives. It's not waiting for you after all this trouble. It is something for you to be sitting and tasting now, even in the midst of trouble. It penetrates that trouble even now. It reaches into your sorrow and beyond it at the same time. Lift up your eyes. If you're caught up looking at the things you're going through right now, lift up your eyes. Don't pretend the trouble's not real. Don't pretend it's not bad. It is. But lift up your eyes and see the joy that surrounds because of what Jesus has done. See the joy that you're living in. And I know that's an easy thing for me to say. It's very easy for me to stand here and say those words to you. And if you're going through a hard time, you know it's incredibly difficult to do. And some of you, maybe most of you, are wondering right now, well, okay, how? Or why don't I experience that joy? Why aren't I experiencing that joy right now? And how am I supposed to experience that joy? What are we supposed to do? Let's talk about that a little bit. Why aren't you living in and experiencing this joy that reaches into this life and beyond this life? Do you remember the parable Jesus told about the different soils? Talked about a farmer going out and throwing seed that lands on different soils. And the idea is that Jesus is this farmer and he's sowing the seeds of this new kingdom, this new government he's establishing with righteousness and good. This joy-bringing life. And he's the farmer sending this seed out. And some of us, many of you, we respond to that with joy and it changes our lives. But then the reason some of us maybe aren't feeling that joy, experiencing that joy is this. Jesus explains, some of the seed falls on rocky ground. And he said, the seed that falls on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and receives it with joy. But then watch. But since they have no root in themselves, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, the world, they quickly fall away. If you need help picturing what that looks like, how you could have joy and be excited about Jesus and then not. Just think about the last week of Jesus' life. How did it start? The triumphal entry. Everybody like, woo, you're the best. How did it end? Crucify him. Something in between took away that joy. Even the disciples themselves barely had enough root in themselves to hang on. They ran away and just barely hung on. What about you? What about our roots? Where are they? Do we have roots in ourselves? Jesus diagnosed the problem as the not having roots in ourselves. That's the way he said it. That's what it means. In other words, your joy comes from external sources. The roots that you've sent out to find joy, they're all external. They're all out there. They're not deep inside. They're not tap roots. They're just ground roots. And you send them into all kinds of things to find joy. Some of you, you sit here and say, yeah, but my joy is in Jesus. You could even be sending roots out into Jesus, but they're still just surface roots. You could still be tapped into Jesus, rooted into Jesus only in an external way with those external kinds of roots. What I mean is you take joy in the idea of Jesus. You take joy in the idea of the cross and the grave and the resurrection and the birth of Jesus. You take joy in those things. You take joy in the idea of being saved and of one day entering into heaven. Jesus is, though, one of the things you take joy in. And it's not an internal root you've sunk into him. It's just one of those external roots you've sent out there. And that's very different from being rooted into Jesus internally, from your soul. You'll know the difference right away. If you're wondering what your roots are like, you'll know the difference right away when trouble hits. Do you lose joy in Jesus when trouble hits? Maybe it only takes a little bit of trouble. Maybe it takes a lot of trouble. Do you lose joy in Jesus when trouble hits? If so, then it's because Jesus is probably one of those external roots for you of joy. There's no root deep inside tapping into Jesus. And so when things get hot and uncomfortable, what happens to those surface roots? What happens to those ground roots when the sun is beating on them and the weather is hurting them and animals are chewing on them? What happens to them? They decay and they wither and they recede and they go away in the heat. We will wither without having roots inside of us, tapped deep into Jesus. Roots that the heat and the elements and the circumstances of life can't touch. That's not new news to you, but so how? How do I get that kind of root? How do I develop that kind of root? I have a revolutionary answer for you today. Something I can't believe no one's ever thought of this before. And I'm glad I get to share it with you because I think this could change all of your lives, hearing this finally for the first time because you've probably never heard this before. How do I get that root sunk into Jesus? You've probably tried a million ways. You probably thought coming here today, that would be enough to make it happen. No, there's a revolutionary way to do it. Prayer. Prayer. You know prayer. You say prayers. Do you think of prayer as the avenue, the pathway for connecting deeply into Jesus so that nothing can rattle or shake you in this world? Do you cling to prayer that way? If I were to tell you, I can give you something right now that will make whatever happens to you for the rest of your life, it'll happen, but you'll be strong and able to endure it. You will have perspective that sees beyond short-sighted issues that come up. I could give you this right now, and you could begin to grow it and develop it, and it'll guide you through this life and give you a joy that's here and now and that lasts beyond this life. If I could give it to you in a pill to swallow, you'd take it in a second. If I told you you had to swallow this pill every day for the rest of your life, what would you do? You would swallow that pill every day for the rest of your life. Prayer is how we connect into Jesus. I've been reading Tim Keller's book on prayer every night for the last week or so. And he reminded me of the book of Job. And the main question in the book of Job is this. He writes, Is it possible that a man or woman can come to love God for himself alone so that there's no fundament, so that there is a fundamental contentment or joy in life, regardless of circumstances? Is that possible? By the end of the book, we see the answer. Yes, it is possible, but only through prayer. If you go back and read the book of Job, you'll see what happens is that the more clearly Job begins to see who God is, his prayers change and they move from complaint into confession, into appeal, into praise. Prayer. Personally, I've felt convicted about the role of prayer in my own life over the past decade. And I've sat back and I've asked and wondered and prayed. Because too many times, frustrations and anger and anxiety and stress and unforgiveness, they have gotten a grip of my heart, and there wasn't enough of that taproot through prayer. And because of that, my roots would wither and I would wither. And life became a slog instead of a joyful journey. Pain would cause me to question, what does anything even matter? Death would make me question, what's the point? But then as I begin to sink my roots into Jesus deeper and deeper in prayer, I find that joy in the midst of trouble and suffering and anxiety and anger and frustration and trouble, all of it, all of it. But it's only through prayer. The only way to develop roots within yourself that are tapped into Jesus and protected from the circumstances of life is by developing a robust prayer life. And it'll take investment on your part and on my part, as any other relationship does. Here's how Jesus described what it would take. He says in a short two-sentence parable in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus says the kingdom of heaven, his government, the world he's bringing about. He said it's like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he buried it again, and then in his joy, he went, and look what he did. For the joy of that treasure he found, he sold everything he had and bought that field. He sold everything he had and bought that field. I think what Jesus is telling you and me there very clearly is if you want to really grab hold of this joy and really be rooted in Jesus and find this joy that is here now and for eternity, stop pursuing and chasing joy everywhere else on all these external sources. Invest into tapping into the joy Jesus brings when he enters into your life and begins to lead you. And that's what it takes to invest in prayer. Sell everything and chase after this treasure, because you'll find it, because he brought it to you. The beginning of next year, which is just a couple weeks away, we're going to begin the way we begin every year, with a week of prayer. So we have Sunday, January 1st. We're going to spend a lot of time in that service praying together. And then Monday through Saturday night that week, we're going to gather and pray every night at 7 o'clock. Be here. Sell everything. Whatever it takes, be here. And let's sink our roots together into Jesus. And find the joy that only he can give, that only God can give us, a joy that reaches into this life and beyond. But it takes that commitment. Sell everything. And that might sound radical. That might sound, okay, that's a little bit over the top. That might feel like you're putting yourself out there. But can I just remind you, this is exactly what Jesus did. Worship team, would you just make your way back? What Jesus calls on us to do, sell everything for this joy you found, is exactly what Jesus did. Go to the book of Hebrews in chapter 12. The first few verses are encouraging you and me. Here's what we should do because of what Jesus has done. It says, therefore, since we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that tangles us up, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer, the perfecter of our faith. In other words, pour everything into participating in the justice that God is bringing about to bring joy to this world through Jesus. Because, why do that? Why should you do that? Because it's exactly what Jesus did. Watch. For the joy set before him, Jesus endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Why did Jesus do it? Why did Jesus do it? What did he say? For the joy that was before him. What was that joy? What was that joy? That joy was in taking his creation, whom he loves, and restoring us to the place where we can become what we were created to be. God didn't need to create us to have relationship. God exists as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. All the relationship he needs, he has within himself as his divine being that honestly can't wrap our minds around that. He didn't need to create us. So why did he create us? The only one reason, because of his generous love to share with us this joy of relationship that in you and me is so broken right now because of sin and selfishness. Jesus came for the joy in front of him, which was to set us free from all of that. Set us free from having to chase after joy in all these external ways so that you and I could participate in this joy by making things right. It's a joy that reaches into this world and reaches beyond this world. And so because Jesus did that, here's what you and I should do. The very last, verse 3 says this: consider, think about, ponder, meditate on, pray about him who endured such opposition from sinners, such opposition to joy. Imagine trying to give someone a gift and they smack it out of your hands and they oppose you. They slam a door in your face. They don't want it. Jesus endured such opposition from sinners. Think about him. Pray. Meditate. So that you will not grow weary or lose heart. Are you weary? Are you losing heart? Tap into Jesus. Think about him. Consider him so that you will not grow weary or lose heart, so that you'll not grow weary or lose heart. You will not grow weary. You will not lose heart when you sell everything to take hold of the joy that God gifts to you and me through Jesus. A joy that enters into this world now, but reaches beyond it.